And I'm Ash. Welcome to Crime Potatoes Podcast.
Grab your snacks, get comfy,
and let's get to it. Welcome back to another episode.
Another week, another episode.
Yeah.
And I'm in a mood, so.
Same.
That's it.
I just had a, I don't even know, a fight with my toddler, I guess. Because, oh my gosh, it was just, lunchtime was a disaster. I could not get anything right. He just wanted one thing, and then after I made it for him, then he decided he didn't want that and he wanted something else, and he was just throwing a fit, and it's been a day. So
I get that.
Yeah.
My husband is on nights, and my toddler in the mornings is a monster. So yeah.
Toddlers, yeah. They're wild.
They are.
They are monsters. Let's just
say
how it
are
is.
Something else. Also, again, guys, go get yourself some comfort, because what am I doing? I am wearing comfort again. My shirt.
The same
my
shirt
pants.
As last week, I think.
I know. It's seriously, these oversized comfort t-shirts are my favorite. I want one, dare I say, in every color.
Yeah. For real. Which is kind of weird for you in every color, because you don't wear color.
I probably
so
wouldn't get them in
every color. That kind of strikes me as odd, but.
But I'd get like 5 in the black and 5 in the purple, so there.
Okay. Fair enough.
I just wear them all the time. So. So, Ash, what are you snacking on today?
So, I already ate half of it. Like I said, it's been a morning. But I went and found all the chocolate I could in my house. So I have some Reese's cups, which I've already eaten half of those. And then I have a Hershey's bar, which is supposed to be your first s'mores, but I needed some chocolate. So that's my snack. And then I just have water today.
Nice.
What about you?
Well, I don't have a snack because it is my turn this week. And again, I don't know how to talk with food.
So. I just make you wait while I take a bite. I'm bringing a snack no matter what, girl.
Fair. So I have my Dr. Pepper. Well, Diet Dr. Pepper.
Good job. I had a Dr. Pepper last night, actually. And you know I've been on like a Pepsi kick. And it was actually really good.
It's actually really good. It's but, always really
yeah.
good.
But also I'm trying not to drink caffeine, you know, because of the migraines. But anyway, that's a whole nother story, so... We'll keep this intro shorter than last week. All right, and it's Kenzie's turn, so
yes, let's get into it. Your girl is a procrastinator, guys, so bear with me. Hopefully everything sounds good. My case sources are 48 Hours, allthatsinteresting.com, cbsnews.com, ColumbusNavigator.com, and UnsolvedMysteries.fandom.com. For years, residents of Circleville, Ohio, a small town with a population barely topping 13,000, were terrorized by a series of anonymous letters filled with personal secrets, disturbing accusations, and cryptic threats. These letters also seem to focus in on one specific person, but no one knew who was behind them or why they were being targeted. And the more the investigation unraveled, the deeper the web of intrigue seemed to grow. Was it a lone, vengeful writer? What was their intention? Was this just a terrifying hoax? Or was this something far darker?
Really fast. just based off of that, what you just shared, did they make a like Netflix series out of this?
No.
Okay.
But there is a case that Netflix did do recently, and it's super scary, about a whole other different writing thing where a family moved into this house and they started receiving letters.
Yes, I just
okay
looked up to see what it's called. It's called The Watcher.
The Watcher,
it sounds very similar because I watched the first season. It was a while ago I watched it, but it was pretty interesting from what I remember.
Yeah, so that one is based off of a different case.
Okay, all right.
So this one's completely different than that. Imagine going through your usual mail routine, only to find a strange letter filled with eerie and unsettling messages. At first, you brush it off, thinking it's just a silly prank by some teenagers. But then the next day, another letter arrives, followed by more each day after that. These letters contain unnervingly specific details about your life and family, and eventually, the tone shifts to something far more threatening and disturbing. This is exactly what happened to the residents of Centerville, Ohio, beginning in 1976. Public officials, local businesses, and many residents began receiving anonymous, threatening letters. People were being accused of embezzlement, domestic violence, affairs, and even murder. An example of what was written says, quote, "You have been watched. Failure to comply, and you shall suffer. No one can help. No one can protect you. Obey, obey," end quote. For Mary Gillespie, though, the letters seemed far too personal, and it quickly became clear that she was the main target of these mysterious letter attacks. Mary Gillespie was a local school bus driver. She married her high school sweetheart, Ron Gillespie, and they had two children together. By all appearances and to everyone that knew them, they were a happy family. But the author of these eerie letters began accusing Mary of having an affair with the school superintendent, Gordon Massey. Despite being unfounded, rumors began circulating and many other residents began receiving letters about Mary and Gordon's alleged affair. One letter to Mary read, quote, "Mrs. Gillespie, stay away from Massey. Don't lie when questioned about meeting him. I know where you live. I've been watching your house and know you have children. This is no joke. Please take it serious. Everyone concerned has been notified and everything will be over soon," end quote.
I hate that.
Right?
I know we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but like just having like that feeling that somebody is watching you, like every step you make, like even if like you're a good person, you're not doing anything bad. Like obviously it's still scary because why do they need to know every aspect of your life and like why?
Yeah. You know?
It's just.
It's creepy.
It's terrifying.
Not long after Mary began getting letters accusing her of this affair, her husband Ron began getting letters. One letter to Ron read, quote, "Mr. Gillespie, your wife is seeing Gordon Massey. You should catch them together and kill them both. He doesn't deserve to live," end quote. At first, Mary and Ron tried to just deal with the situation themselves, but then Mary received this letter, quote, "Lady, this is your last chance to report him. I know you are a pig, and I will prove it, and shame you out of Ohio. A pig sneaks around and meets other women's husbands behind their backs, causes families and homes and marriages to suffer," end quote. Finally, the Gillespies turned to the police for help. Given that similar incidents were happening throughout the city, authorities took the situation seriously. They set up surveillance on homes and even enlisted the post office in an attempt to intercept the letters before they were sent. Despite their efforts, however, the mysterious writer remained elusive. Then on an evening in August 1977, things changed. While Mary was on a trip to Florida with her sister, Ron received a call at their home. According to his children, when Ron got off the phone, he was visibly furious. He grabbed his .22 revolver, walked out the door, and declared that he was heading out to confront the letter writer. Shortly after storming out and driving off, Ron's truck swerved off the road and crashed into a tree. Ron Gillespie died at the scene.
Oh my gosh.
The cause of Ron's death was ultimately ruled an accident. While his blood alcohol level was found to be high at the time of his death, his children firmly insisted that this was impossible, claiming he hadn't even had a beer that night before he left. Adding to the mystery, it was discovered that Ron had fired his revolver sometime before the fatal crash, leaving many to question the events leading up to his death. Despite Ron's tragic death, the letters continued on, pointing fingers and causing more mistrust between neighbors.
A lot of people are like, oh, it's, you know, just a coincidence. But what a crazy coincidence mm-hmm. that would be. You know what I mean?
And everything that I could all find, that happen. It's still considered an accident. But the gun thing, did he end up confronting someone about these letters? And if so, does that mean, did he recognize whoever was on the phone call? I don't know. There's so many questions surrounding that, but they never investigated further surrounding the accident.
Kind of crazy to me.
So it's definitely interesting. Yeah. For several years, the letters continued, escalating to large signs being left along Mary's bus route. In February 1983, as she was on her way to pick up children from school, Mary noticed a handmade sign hanging on a fence. The sign was vulgar and targeted her teenage daughter, crossing a line that had never been crossed before. Upset, Mary stopped the bus and got out to remove the sign. However, as she tried to pull it down, she realized it was attached to a box. She decided to just take the entire package home with her. When she finally did open the box, she was shocked to find a loaded gun inside. If Mary had succeeded with tearing the sign down and away from the box, she would have triggered, no pun intended, she would have triggered a booby trap and set off the gun. Someone had just attempted to murder Mary Gillespie.
Oh my gosh.
Luckily, the gun gave authorities a break in the case. The Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation was able to recover a serial number from the gun, and the gun belonged to Paul Fresher. And Paul was married to Ron Gillespie's sister.
Interesting.
The police began to investigate further. They found that Paul's relationship with his wife, Karen Sue, was tense, and the couple was in the midst of a contentious divorce. Paul Fresher's wife, Karen Sue, confessed to the police that her husband had been the author of the Circleville letters and that she had allegedly discovered letters hidden throughout their home. Despite her confession, Paul denied writing the letters, insisting that the gun used in the incident had been stolen weeks earlier. However, a polygraph test revealed that Paul was lying. In 1984, Paul was convicted of attempted murder after an expert witness testified that he had written the Circleville letters, and he was sentenced to 7 to 25 years in prison. Finally, with a suspected letter writer behind bars, the residents of Circleville hoped they could finally move on and heal. But the letters didn't stop.
No!
After Paul Fresher's conviction, hundreds of letters continued to flood Circleville, with one even finding its way to Paul himself. To eliminate any doubt, the prison launched an investigation and confirmed that Paul could not have been the author. So if it wasn't Paul, Then who was sending these chilling letters? During Paul's trial, his lawyer had raised two striking questions. Quote, who hated Paul enough to try to get him into trouble? If you read the divorce decree, who stands to profit financially if Paul is convicted and sent to prison? End quote. As the letters persisted and these questions from the trial came back up, suspicion shifted toward Paul's now ex-wife, Karen Sue, who had reported him to the police. Was she part of some plot to frame Paul? Well, unfortunately, we may never have that answer. Years passed, and the Circleville letters mystery only grew more baffling. In December of 1993, the TV show Unsolved Mysteries arrived in Circleville to investigate, only to receive an anonymous letter of their own. It read, quote, forget Circleville, Ohio. If you come to Ohio, you sickos will pay. End quote. It was signed, the Circleville writer. Desperate for answers, Paul spoke with the show, begging them to, quote, reopen the letter part of it and find out who wrote the letters. End quote. Then, in 1994, the same year Paul Frescher was released from prison on parole, the letters suddenly stopped arriving in Circleville. But Paul maintained his innocence all the way up to his death in 2012. However, a recent forensic examination revealed disturbing similarities between his handwriting and that of the anonymous letters, as well as many of the letters allegedly had his fingerprints on them. But nothing has been done or released about it. The case remains unsolved to this day, and the local sheriff's office officially closed it. With so much uncertainty and contradiction surrounding this case, the mystery of the Circleville letters may never be resolved.
Ugh.
And that's
so
that.
So many questions. Like, first of all, who obviously wrote the letters?
Right?
But if it was Paul and they, like, checked in everything and he obviously wasn't sending them from prison, then did he
have... Yeah, the prison was adamant that he had no access to pen, paper, pencils,
yeah,
whatever.
And
in the prison.
I mean, I feel like you could probably trust that because they... I know... When you send letters, like, they open them up and everything and check them before, like, anybody even receives letters.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's just, yeah, there's that. But also, did he have, if it was him that was writing the letters, did he have, like, an accomplice, you know, that was sending the letters for him?
Right.
Or,
well, there's so many questions.
It's just...
And I didn't put this in here, but I'm going to say it. So a couple years after Ron's death, so Mary's husband's mm-hmm. death, she actually did start seeing the superintendent that she was accused of having an affair with. So it makes you question, was there some validity to that? But again, it was, I think, like a year, maybe two after Ron's death that they started dating. And then again, everything surrounding Ron's death makes you wonder if he knew... if he discovered who the letter writer was, and it would make sense if it was Paul because he would definitely recognize Paul's voice or whatever. I don't know. There's so much to it that I feel like they should be able to find out who wrote those letters. If you watch the 48 hours episode, which you can find the full episode on YouTube, which we'll make sure to link it in our show notes, but it actually goes into more detail about the recent, what are they called? I can't even think of it. But they do the forensic writing analysis. There we go. And this was done, fairly recently in the last couple of years. And she says she... would believe that Paul wrote the letters by doing the analysis. But I don't know. I don't know. I can see the similarities, but I don't know. I also can see how someone maybe made it look like it was his handwriting.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so much. Yeah.
That's so crazy. And just like so creepy. Just all the unknown.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do know too, in 2002, Paul and Karen Sue's son ended up committing suicide. And there was some rumors surrounding that maybe he was the accomplice or even was the letter writer himself getting back at his parents or whatever. Yeah, there's so much more to this than what I even just gave you. But it was so much, and there was a lot of repetitiveness. Is that the right word? I don't know. That I just tried to stick more to what we do know for a fact rather than just rumors.
Yeah.
So.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, definitely interesting and creepy.
Guess we will. We may never know.
Yeah.
But thank you for sharing. That's crazy and really interesting. Now my mind's just going to be like turning. Yeah. The rest of the day.
And now that you reminded me of the Watchers, I'm gonna have to maybe do that one. Unless you beat me to it.
It's just called The Watcher.
The Watcher.
Just The Watcher. Right. On Netflix. Yeah. And it was pretty interesting. Yeah.
I do know that one's based off of a real true crime thing. So, and I think that one is also unsolved.
Okay. So I'm gonna read, just because we're on the topic of this show, I'm just gonna read you guys like the description of it. Real fast, because then you guys can know, and this is why I thought of the case. But it says, anonymous letters, strange neighbors, sinister threats, a family moves into their suburban dream home only to discover they've inherited a nightmare. So that's the overview. And then it also says, so-and-so, I'm not going to say their names because I don't feel like it, so-and-so star in the eerie ensemble drama based on a true story from Ryan Murphy and Ian Brennan.
Nice. Yeah. No, I can see why you thought that this was the case, but no, it is a separate case. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Kent.
Yup.
And thank you all for listening. Please leave us a review. Turn on automatic downloads. It really helps us out. Share with your friends. Follow us on Instagram at Crime Potatoes.
Give us a shout out.
On Facebook at Crime Potatoes Podcast. Yeah, all the things. We really appreciate it.
Yes.
And yeah, we will be back next week for a brand new episode. Stay safe, potatoes.
Bye.